Blog Talk Radio.
You know, frequently, actually, this ties in really well. I was watching Jeopardy earlier tonight, actually. Because usually what I do is I like to unwind a little bit before the show because I have my notes done. Unless there's something like major that happens, which today it didn't. Sometimes it does. Then I had to go back and rewrite my notes, you know, kind of update them. And then, you know, if I have all my notes done, then I can unwind and watch Jeopardy. And, you know, I learn stuff as well as put my knowledge out there. Well, tonight on Jeopardy, there was a young lady crushing it, man. Her name was Kaya or something like that. I don't know. But she was crushing it. She was like $10,000 up on the nearest competitor, up like $19,600, hits double Jeopardy for Spanish NBA teams. And now my Spanish isn't good, so I'm not even going to try to say what it was. But it was Spanish for the Denver Nuggets. The Denver Nuggets was the answer. But the, you know, judging from her previous sample size, her previous proportion, of course, we didn't have a giant sample size to work from. She missed the $800 question, which was the Cavaliers, whatever Spanish for the Cavaliers was. And she hits double Jeopardy. And I'm not kidding you. Like, she's up like $9,600 to $10,000 on the nearest competitor. And based on that small sample size that she got incorrectly, not only did it get incorrectly, but it looks like, on her face at least, that she's never spoken a word of Spanish, nor heard a word of Spanish spoken in all of her entire life. So, much to everyone's chagrin, she bets $12,000 on Jeopardy. Double Jeopardy. And I was like, what? What? You just look like you heard Spanish for the first time. You're betting $12,000. I think her miscommunication was she wanted to bet $1,200, but it came out as $12,000. That's the only thing I can think of. I mean, this girl was going to win Jeopardy, and they had a five-day champ on there. She's now a six-day champ because she just went on a tear the last few questions. She was like a shark. She smelled blood in the water. And she kept on and kept on pushing back, and she wound up winning. And the girl who was crushing walked out with nothing outside of the money she got for third place, which is, I think, $1,000, I think. But, yeah, it was an all-time miscommunication. I don't know what she was thinking. I don't. It was crazy. It's like it was almost as if we were in a world where the Seattle Seahawks chose to not run on the 1 yard. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm getting looks over here. I'm like, sitting over here looking at me like, really? It's really. Yes, it's still rolling. We're still talking about that. Kickoff's about ready to start for the next season. We got to beat this into the ground. There's all sorts of good jokes you could put on there. Look at me like that. Turn the other way. Okay. So we got a big show for y'all tonight. I am Gary, the Dr. Lockhart. Postmaster will be calling in a little bit later on, I think. trying to help his wife out. That was a miscommunication. I wish Stephanie, his wife, a very speedy recovery. She had a procedure done. Everything's fine. I had no idea that this was happening today, though, as it was supposed to happen on her birthday. So, happy birthday. We're taking out your gallbladder. Oh, you know, these things happen, though. That was a miscommunication, though. But, yeah, so we're up. We're up and running. Got a good show for you. Short show. We're still going to be off the air by 10, you know, because that's how we roll here at Triple Threat Talk on the Mothership Show, where you can find other programs such as Airplay, The Lounge, and The Pit Stop. The Lounge, by the way, returning tomorrow night. It's going to be great. Got a big show planned for y'all. No special guests. But with it going into summer movies, I actually felt like there wasn't any time for any special guests. So we'll be talking about that. Anyway, let's dig into tonight. You're going to talk about the NCAA tournament. Gosh, the officiating was terrible in this tournament. Oh, it was so bad. It was almost as bad as the Seattle Seahawks choosing not to run on the one-yard line. That's how bad it was. It's pretty bad. Pretty bad officiating. Some opening day happened. This is after this episode of Triple Threat Talk. It's going to be every other week until the Derby. Then we're going to do 2 weeks of Derby coverage. And then we'll be back on every other week. Because, frankly, let's face it, baseball is overplayed. It's drawn out. It's important in certain spots. But it's not something you can do, like, all week, every week. So this is the time we kind of recharge our batteries from football season. Oh, and because Jimmy and I, we've watched every single game on sports for the last 180 days, more or more, 270 days, something like that. So we're taking a little bit of break every other week for the next couple weeks. So the next episode of Triple Threat Talk will be 2 weeks from tonight. But let's dig in. NCAA tournament, of course, the best team in college basketball, unquestioned, were the Kentucky Wildcats. As it so happens in one-game playoff tournament systems, they did not win. They did get bested by the Wisconsin Badgers. No problems there. But the Kentucky Wildcats were, 38-1. They're number one through from first of the gate to out of the gate to the last poll. They're the best team in college basketball. You may think that just because they lost one game, they're not the best team in college basketball. I would tell you that you're on crack. They are by far the best team in college basketball. The lady friend, her brother-in-law actually has a good philosophy when it comes to these kind of things. It's, you on playoffs, you want to really see kind of like a 2 out of 3 gaming system There's no way Wisconsin beats Kentucky 2 out of 3 games. In that game, speaking of the officiating, that game, it was okay. There were missed calls on both ends, but it was missed calls to a push. Kentucky should have had a flagrant one called on them, Trey Lyles specifically, when Trey Lyles reached around and hit Sam Decker. It was an accident. That's why it should have been a flagrant one, not a flagrant two. It was not a play on the ball, but it was flagrant one, and it went uncalled. And then on the other end for Wisconsin, of course, the atrocious goaltending or the atrocious call where it was expected. The bucket counted, even though the shot clock said zero and it was at the 2:30 mark, and they couldn't go because monitors apparently aren't allowed to be used until the last 2 minutes, which is bogus because I've seen them use it before. That's the reasoning on that. It was pretty awful officiating, really starting right here in Louisville in round one when UCLA, the goaltending call with UCLA and SMU, that was atrocious. Really, any game that Ellis from Cincinnati wasn't ejected because that kid was just – he was wanting to fight every which way. And, of course, the national championship game, which we'll get into in a second, the out of bounds scene around the world everywhere except for the officials. It's interesting here because the officials are saying that they couldn't see the clear as day angle of Jahlil Okafor hitting the ball out of bounds by his fingertip. Instead, of course, Duke gets to keep the ball, but they said they didn't see that angle. And the head of the officiating crew, Scott, I think is his name. Scott. They're saying that, you know, he had the option to buzz it in, but chose to decline the option of saying, hey, by the way, there's a missed call. You guys missed this. I'm going to buzz it down because this is an important, and it was. This is a two-point game at the time. All Wisconsin had to do was reclaim the possession of the ball, go down, and score. It was happening all game, and Wisconsin seemed unstoppable in the post at some point. Yeah, they missed a few coming down the end, but really they were a little bit unstoppable in the post. And, you know, yeah, Duke was beating their guys off the dribble a whole lot, and, you know, yeah, they were kind of weak off the glass. But you got Kaminsky going in on the post. He was doing pretty well. Playing the post pretty well. I didn't think Okafor had a great game at all. I thought one of the things that Wisconsin was beating Duke at was post play and points in the paint. But Duke, all in all, beating Wisconsin off the dribble all night. It was ridiculous. You know, you had a lot of charges being called. And that's another thing that needs to be cleaned up in the game, drop charge. Or block charge, I should say. Susie sells seashells by the seashore. But anyways, getting back to the officiating. So they're hitting the ball out of bounds, and they give it to the people that hit the ball out of bounds. And they're saying you can see an angle. All of CBS can see an angle. All the viewers on CBS can see this angle. Lo and behold, turns out we can't see this angle if you're an official. I thought it was kind of silly because they said they couldn't see the angle that really tore this apart. I mean, you know, it was definitive, man. It was a definitive angle, and they couldn't see it. And then, you know, the NCAA vice president comes out today on OTL and says that, wait a minute, that's not quite true. The head of officiating really needs to get his facts straight. They had access to all angles. And he said that that was simply not the case. So now you've got he said, she said, and this is a pivotal play. I mean, this play not being called correctly, you could argue, cost Wisconsin their shot at the national championship in the end. You know, and you know, but Bo Ryan really has no stool to step on when it comes to officiating, because, you know, of what happened in the Kentucky game with that basket. And yes, I just said the flagrant canceled it out, but both of these things happen in time. So you know, you get calls and you miss calls. So Bo Ryan to come out and say that the officials were against them is really kind of classless. And I rarely defend Duke because it's Duke, and nobody really likes Duke unless you're ESPN. And then you love Duke for some reason. There's this fascination with Duke, especially since most people in actual North Carolina are NC State fans. It's kind of crazy. But, yeah, so – so you've got this whole thing happening, and it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, because it's a he said, she said. So now you've got the NCAA and its officials kind of at an impasse. And I think it's an interesting impasse, but Duke goes on to win its fifth national championship under Coach K, all of them under Coach K. Who, by the way, is a great coach. You'll never hear me say otherwise. I just think that the fascination with Duke a lot of times is not is not one that the NCAA should be proud of, because there's so many people who just suck up to Duke for no reason. But 68-63, the final in that one, tied going into the half, like a lot of games were. Frank Kaminsky, Tyus Jones, and Allen were the performers. Of course, Frank Kaminsky, a top performer in Wisconsin, 21 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists. Tyus Jones, 23 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist. And Gray Allen, 16 points, 2 rebounds, and 0 assists for Duke. But, yeah, so that was pretty much the championship game. A lot of people getting beat off the dribble, like I said. Other than that, I thought both teams played how they wanted to play. Wisconsin, of course, you know, you don't want to let those guys beat you off the dribble, because then what happens is you see an abundance of charges and all that. There's a lot of flops on both ends of the ball. That's another thing that needs to be cleaned up. They say in the rule book that if you're going to flop, it's a technical. We need to start calling a flop a technical. I'm sorry, flopping was ridiculous this year. Chris Jones with an embarrassing flop earlier in the year for the University of Louisville. Kaminsky, Okafor, Aaron Harrison, Ellis. You know, a lot of these people, a lot of these players are just flopping, and these are clear technicals. And if you're not going to follow that part of the rule book, just throw it out. I don't think I've seen somebody, you know, call a flop a technical. I don't think I've seen it, even though it's in the rule book. I really don't. I don't think I've seen it. I want to talk about the Kentucky-Wisconsin game. The Duke and Michigan State game was kind of a clear conclusion, a foregone conclusion. Michigan State posing a threat for a little bit, but toward 10-minute mark, they just kind of you could just see the momentum was slowly shifting towards Duke, even though it was a very close game. The Kentucky, the Harrison twins were really all that kept them in the game. Willie Cauley-Stein did not come up to play. He didn't even shake hands at the end, which I didn't see that at the end of the game. They had to tell me he didn't shake his hands. That was kind of stupid. As well as, you know, the remarks by the Harrison twins at the end, pretty stupid. You know, I won't repeat it here, but definitely some language pointed towards Frank Kaminsky. They later called Kaminsky and said, "I'm sorry." Heat of the moment, but I will say this. These kids, any kid, not just Kentucky, I'd say it even if it was Duke. You get these kids at the, you know, when their heart has been broken, you know, they're playing so hard, 38-1, you know, you're going to get their raw answer. Whether you like it or not, we in the media have to be prepared to give, to receive a raw answer. And we have to understand that sometimes it's not going to be a polite answer or a politically correct answer. And every now and then, you know, it doesn't excuse what was said, but every now and then you get a glimpse of the kid. No, it doesn't mean Harrison is a thug. He's one of the nicest kids. He visits children's hospitals and, you know, plays with the kids and all that. No, it doesn't mean he's a thug. It means he's a normal 19-year-old kid who just had his heart ripped out of his chest is what it means. And, you know, I think I think it's a normal human emotion, you know. Just like earlier in the year, Montrezl Harrell at Western Kentucky, you know, he was throwing his fist around because he got hit in pretty close to his private area. It wasn't his private area. There are a lot of people that said it was, but if you have any inkling of what human anatomy looks like, he got hit on his inner thigh, kind of up there, though. It definitely didn't hit it, you know, but it was got close. And he then comes out and starts swinging at kids, you know, because he's thinking he's being gang busted on the court and no one's calling anything. And it should have been called a foul at that point. But it forced Montrezl Harrell to go out and start throwing his fists, and he gets called for the flagrant. Doesn't mean Montrezl is a thug. He's a normal 19-year-old kid. He thought he was getting attacked. You know, there are some games where the refs really – there are a lot of games where refs and officiating don't – you know, you want the kids to play, and then there's, you know, four kids ganging up on one. The call should have been broken up a lot sooner than what it was. As a result, Montrezl Harrell got a flagrant.
doesn't mean, I got the flagrant two where he's ejected. It doesn't mean that Montrezl Harrell is a thug or a bad player. It just means that, you know, he outlashed a little bit. So none of these things, one-time instances, never mean a kid is a thug. It just means that they're normal kids. So, but yeah, so, you know, Kentucky not showing up. Although the Harrisons were keeping Kentucky in it, the Harrisons, the last three trips down the court of the game, drawing air on shots. When they're up by four, that lead, of course, went to a six-point deficit. You can't play 4 minutes to go. You can't milk the clock and then take a sorry shot. That was one time the kids all year acted like they were young. If Kentucky does a little bit better shot selection and a little bit better at working their clock, they probably win that game. As well as not having Devin Booker play in the post. I don't know what that was all about. It was pretty bad. You had Devin Booker manning up against Frank Kaminsky. And, yes, they switch in and switch out, but at all times you had at least two trees if you're Kentucky. You had at least Karl Anthony Towns, Dakari Johnson, Willie Cauley-Stein, and Marcus Lee on the floor at all times. Two of the four at all times. So there's no excuse at all for Devin Booker to be playing inside the post. I thought that was a pretty bad coaching job as well. So if you have any thoughts on the NCAA tournament, I'd love to hear them. I'm going to open up the phone lines. 1-347-826-9974. It's 1-347-826-9974. It is the end of the tournament, so if you want to talk about any game in particular, want to review anything, talk about some officiating calls I might have missed. Those were the major ones, I thought. Talk about the games, the championship game, anything like that. You guys can, we can talk about that. Been joined now by my partner in crime. What's going on, partner in crime? Hello? No, I was being joined by him, but he decided to drop off. He was there, though. Like I said, 1-347-826-9974. It's 1-347-826-9974. We're going to move on to opening day. Opening day was yesterday. So, you know, baseball is in the air. It's spring. There was a shellacking yesterday, too. Atlanta and Miami. The Braves absolutely destroying the Marlins 12-2. 12-2, an absolute shellacking. So you could say that Atlanta has actually been wanting to play all season long. They had a lot of pent-up stuff. We did already have our first postponed game, St. Louis and Chicago game. One of the funnier memes on Facebook, I thought, were Chicago fans. There's a couple of Chicago fans, like, praying. So thank God we don't have to play St. Louis. It rained. So I thought that was pretty funny. Arizona getting it done against San Francisco, 7-6. I thought that was an interesting score, especially for the defending champs. The Padres beating the Dodgers 7-3. The Reds pulled one out on their opening day, although I can't find that score. I'm sorry about that. Let's see if this says it right here. Locally, we're kind of Reds fans. I'm San Francisco, though, because I'm 49ers, but let's find two. Where are these at? Scoreboard for Tuesday. I'm sorry about this, everybody. Did it kill me? I thought I had it written down. Turns out I did not. No. Well, apparently they don't have the red score up for some reason. I don't know why that is. It's weird. Anyways, so yeah, a lot of baseball going on currently, actually, too. They've got some baseball going on right now. In the bottom of the third, the Washington Nationals beating the Mets 2-1. The Phillies beating Boston 3-0 at the top of the seventh, bottom of the end of the sixth. New York, the Yankees down to Toronto 2-1. The White Sox 3-1 over the Royals. So we've got some baseball going on right now. Let's see if I can get a Reds score up. I don't see the Reds. Where are the Reds? Why aren't the Reds playing? This is weird. You know what? Fine. There we go. The Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game is delayed, which is probably why I couldn't find that score. So you got baseball going on in full swing, full effect. Postmaster wanted to talk about one of these trades that happened from Atlanta. I'm not – everyone that watches the show knows that baseball – not my strong suit. I can talk a little baseball though, but yeah. Let's see here. Where is it? You know, I usually feel bad about leaving blanks about this, but then I heard our local ESPN affiliate did it yesterday. So I don't feel so bad about it after hearing a professional do it. Yeah, I can't find that trade anywhere. Can't find it. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. But anyway, so, let's see here. Yeah, it's not there. I'm not even going to waste any more time on it. But, yeah, so, you know, you had these the players, the Dodgers executives apparently are forced to be reckoned with. They spent millions to build a think tank of baseball's most innovative minds and the smartest minds in the game are ready to shake things up. So we're going to see how the Dodgers go. Yeah, that's really been kind of the story. I do know that. One of the major stories in the offseason is the Dodgers are trying to get some people to change the way they're thinking about baseball. And I think it's pretty interesting in this article by ESPN. A guy sees just about everything over 15 years. But you ask Jimmy Rollins, his trade rumors swirled this winter. The former NL MVP and three-time All-Star shortstop reached out to D. Gordon, and the weird part for Rollins was that his teammates with the 26-year-old father, Tom Flash Gordon, in Philadelphia from 2006 to 2009. So that made Rollins feel old. So it got them to kind of thinking about, you thought it'd be a good opportunity to have some of these people kind of meet up and meet in the middle, kind of get this master plan going. So the Dodgers' new front office, Andrew Friedman, and general manager Farhan Zaidi and vice president Josh Burns arrived at their private hotel suite in San Diego. Let's see here. Long said the team needed a radical makeover, and the debates by then depended between them at the point over details, not over philosophy. So they're going to be ironing out some details, and apparently they're going to try to change the way we think about baseball. So it's going to be interesting to watch this Dodgers team, especially their front office, and kind of figure out what they're going to be, what they're going to be talking about. So, yeah, that's pretty much really all of sports that we've got right now. With baseball, of course, basketball ending. The Harrisons are entering the draft from Kentucky. Already expect to sign with an agent. The official announcement on who's going to go pro coming from Kentucky will be tomorrow. Other teams. Carl Anthony Towns from Kentucky expected to go pro. No official announcement there yet, though. Okafor, of course. Carl Anthony Towns is number one on the big board. Joahiel Okafor, number two. Emmanuel Mudiay from China. is number three. D'Angelo Russell, Ohio State, number four. Chris Stapps, Perezingas from Latvia is number five. Justice Winslow from Duke is number six. Willie Cauley-Stein projected at number seven. Mario Hezonja from Croatia is eight. Kevin Looney from Kevon Looney from UCLA, number nine. And Miles Turner from Texas, number 10. Currently, the Harrisons aren't really projected, so it makes me wonder why they think that they're good. I personally don't think the Harrisons are good enough. I thought the offense ran a lot smoother with Tyler Ulis in on the mix this year. But yeah, so some of these choices are interesting. I thought for sure the only people that were going to go pro this year would be Willie Cauley-Stein, Trey Lyles, and Carl Anthony Towns. Now it turns out that Dakari Johnson, of all people, is expecting to go pro, and it's really kind of interesting, some of these people that are planning to go pro, because some of them really don't even deserve to go pro. I think, you know, just because Dakari Johnson is a near 7-footer doesn't really mean that he can go pro. I see him as a less talented than Daniel Orton. And we all know that Daniel Orton, the first year of this Calipari in Kentucky, Daniel Orton completely bombed in the NBA. And Daniel Orton had more talent than Dakari Johnson. So whatever Johnson's thinking, I don't know what the Harrisons are thinking. I don't know. Carl Anthony Towns, Trey Lyles, and Willie Cauley-Stein, definitely the only ones that even should go pro. And you can make an argument that Trey Lyles should be coming back. But I think now I've finally got Jimmy on the line. Jimmy, are you there this time?
What's up, Doc?
Jimmy?
Sorry for the delay.
What's going on?
Well,
what's going on,
my
friend? How are you?
I'm doing all right. I've been a little busy today. I'm trying to play five people at one time, and it's just I'm getting pulled in a million different directions, doing a million different things. The wife, unfortunately, had to go under the knife last week. She had her gallbladder removed on Thursday, and she never had to experience anything like this before. She's never had any kind of procedure like this, so this was all new and scary to her. And so she's, going through it. What may seem like a minor surgery to a lot of people is really, she's in a lot of pain. And, you know, she has her ups and downs. She has her good days and her bad days. And, you know, luckily she's slowly getting through it. And hopefully she'll be back to her normal self in the next couple of days. So, you know, just trying to keep up and take care of the wife. Then, of course, got to take care of the little monster Bristol. We all know what kind of a handful she can be. So, got to keep everybody in line, make sure everybody's in good shape. So, you know, while the wife's down, I got to assume all, you know, duties. You know, I'm doing the, like I said, it's cooking and all the essentials that need to be done, the house cleaning and all that stuff, and making sure all the ducks are in a row. And then I realized what time it was, and wait, I have a show to do. And not to mention, I was on the phone for an hour today, Doc, with some famous officials from the Las Vegas Gaming Commission. And
oh, really?
Yes. I could not, Doc, for whatever reason. They would not. Nobody in Las Vegas would take my bet that Jack Nicklaus would hit a hole in one at Augusta. I don't know why, but nobody.
I wonder why you couldn't find anyone
to
take that bet.
What an awesome sight that was. That was amazing. I posted that a little earlier on the Facebook page, the video of him hitting the hole in one in the par three contest today at Augusta. And that was an amazing, amazing sight. It's great to see that at his age, just still knocking them down and, just outstanding. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's up there. I mean, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I was actually talking to John Ashton earlier today, and
you know, like, you know, some of these people are on tour and all these things, you know, these people are hitting hole-in-ones, you know, quick and low. There's already been like 20 hole-in-ones already this season. It's some crazy number of hole-in-ones already this season. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see as the as time goes on what's going on with all these.
Right, absolutely. I totally agree with you. It's definitely amazing to see. And as you said, there was a lot of fun action today with the par three contest, and I think it was doubly exciting when Nicklaus was able to ace that. He's actually a ripe 75 years old. So it just goes to show you, Doc, sometimes age isn't everything. So here he is, 75, out there swinging away and still knocking aces down. So that is an awesome, awesome thing to see. So
what you're telling me is I've still got time.
You still have time. I know you have a problem with I know you have a little bit of a problem on your golf game. You got some work to do. So you have more than enough ample time. I mean, you're barely in your 30s. So you got a good 40-plus years to go yet before you got to go.
40 years to go, yeah.
Yeah, at least. So, I mean, don't sweat it, my friend. You have all kinds of time, you know. So I just think that's outstanding. And, a lot of people, you know, he kind of gets foreshadowed by the, the guys of today, like Rory McIlroy and Phil and, you know, still even a little bit Tiger and, you know, some others. So to see him to kind of come back into the spotlight, even if it's just for the day, or for the next couple of days, because, you know, that'll be talked about for a couple of days. So, you know, it's just awesome, very cool to see. I mean, I equate that to, like, you know, the par three contest obviously is not the Masters, but still, that would be like Michael Jordan coming back and hitting a slam dunk in his 60s in the slam dunk contest. That's kind of what I equate that to. So that's pretty awesome stuff there, definitely.
All right.
So I caught the tail end of what you were discussing about all the players, the mass exodus, I guess we'll call it, from the University of Kentucky. All the many players that are deciding to leave and take on their chances as a pro. And I think you're right, Doc, but I will say I agree with you on the Harrison twins. I don't know why they're deciding to go pro. They did some great things, but I don't think they both warranted being, you know, leaving college this year to go pro. I think if they'd had one more year, you know, maybe another year under the belt, they may have a better shot. But I think they're leaving a bit early. Obviously, Willie Cauley-Stein going pro, you know, that's a given. That should happen. And obviously, with Karl-Anthony Towns going pro, that's no surprise. Tyler Ulis going pro, that's no surprise. Have we heard anything on the end of Michael Booker?
Devin Booker? No, we haven't heard anything about
Devin Booker.
He's one of the ones expected. He's expected to go pro, but apparently everyone at UK that's going to go pro will be announcing tomorrow at 2:30. So we're going to be trying to get some word on that. But I it's one of those things where you're kind of sitting back, you're wondering, especially some of these ones, because even when they declare, as long as they don't sign with an agent, they've still got about another week or so to take their name out of the draft. But from what I understand, Dakari Johnson and the Harrisons will be the only ones signing an agent immediately. So those are the three that don't need to sign an agent are the ones that apparently will be signing an agent. So we'll be seeing. I definitely want to see some improvement out of the Harrisons, but it looks like they've either A, had enough for school, or B, they think they're that good. And
you know, sometimes somebody gets in these kids' ears and, you know, they're like, oh, you're good enough to go pro. You know, you want to listen to family and friends, but sometimes they just don't have your best interest at heart. And I'm sorry, I'm here to tell you, but that's how the world works. Everyone wants to try to dig their hand into your pocket.
Well,
if that's one of the things that's going on, I don't know. But I think you need to really take a look at yourself and say, look, am I truly good enough to go pro? And I think if you're the Harrisons, I think you really gotta. I think you really have to reexamine a little bit further.
Right, absolutely. And I think a perfect case in point was in that semifinal matchup against Wisconsin. The last 3 minutes of that game was a lot of Harrison-only ball, and you see where that got him. So that clearly
mm-hmm.
proved, although he did hit some, the one Harrison hit some big shots in the previous tournament,
well,
and he hit some big shots in this tournament. Go ahead.
To be fair though, the Harrisons were the only ones that apparently showed up on
yeah.
Saturday to play Wisconsin. But, you know, you can't draw air your last three possessions going down. You can't
right.
draw air, and you can't have that bad a shot selection. And they just broke every cardinal rule of basketball with a 4-point lead going down the stretch against Wisconsin. About the only thing they were doing on Wisconsin was beating Wisconsin off the dribble. Other than that, their shot selection was terrible the last 3 minutes. It is terrible.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's what I said to many of people. I said, well, I was like, you know, in all honesty, Kentucky did the one thing you never would have thought they did. They went away from their game plan the last 3 minutes of the game. They went away from what worked
mm-hmm.
the whole time. When they went up four, and then they had a chance to go up six or seven, and then it didn't happen. And then all of a sudden, Wisconsin came storming back with the 9-shot clock that should have been a shot clock. But we won't get into that. That'll take us hours if we start talking about everything that should have happened that didn't happen. but once you had that pump basket there, you had the Sam Decker hit that three. I mean, that was it. It was like once Wisconsin regained the lead after being down four, it was like Kentucky just – it was like, what the heck happened? It was like they weren't really ever out of it until like the last 30 seconds. I mean, they just – it amazed me. And it was almost like in the last 3 minutes, Wisconsin, about the last 2.5 minutes, 2 to 2.5 minutes, Wisconsin played like the team that wanted it more for whatever reason. I mean, three straight, like you said, three straight empty possessions. I mean, who in their right mind would say with the team that they had and all the great talent, all the great plays we've seen many and numerous of times, to have three empty possessions in a big time atmosphere in a big time like that, that was amazing to me. But I will say, with Duke obviously ended up winning the championship on Monday, in regards to Kentucky, you know, I don't, and especially now since it sounds like to me that there's going to be a real mass exodus on the team, and I don't know what they're. And I'll get you to answer this for me here in just a second, but I don't know what their projected, like, incoming class is, how many guys they have planned incoming for next year.
Number one.
No. How many? Well, I figured that, but I didn't know how many.
Oh.
Guys.
Gotcha.
I
think they've got five coming in.
Okay. So they could – they're pretty much – they're probably losing, what would you say, about six or seven, and they're going to gain five. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
Okay, so in saying that, okay, you're having a mass exodus. A lot of these players are leaving. You started off, as you said, 38-0. You came up just short with the loss to Wisconsin. But you still, in that, you still made history because no team in the history of the NCAA has ever won 38 games. So they still made history, regardless. So this is still a historical team. This is still a history-making team from that regard. So you can't say because they lost. You can look at it and say, yeah, it was a failure because they didn't go 40-0 and they didn't win the national title. But in my opinion, I don't consider it a failure because no team in the history of NCAA has ever won 38 games.
You know, and instead of being – and that's the thing, you know, people are losing track of or losing sight of. You know, instead of being compared to, say, that Indiana team that went undefeated and won the championship, these people – these kids are not going to be compared a little bit more to – the UNLV team, but at the same time, you know, everyone was like, oh, well, they blew their chance. Well, number one, they're still the best team in college basketball. And two, they are still going to be, they're still going to be remembered because they set so many records this year. The history books will never forget this team, regardless if they won the national championship or not. Sometimes you are that lucky. And even though you don't get the prize at the end, history remembers you anyways. And
right.
So it would have been nice to have the prize and history, but I think them being remembered in the history books probably for quite some time to come is a little bit of consolation in all this.
Absolutely, and that was my takeaway from the outside looking in if you look at it from that standpoint, then you're right, Doc. It's clear that they're going to go down in history as one of the best college basketball teams of all time. The record books will show. They went undefeated in their conference. They went undefeated against in the regular season. They were like 7-0 against top 25 opponents in the regular season. So they were undefeated against the top 25. They were, you know, they broke all kinds of records. I mean, it's one game, and you can't really, and I get it, you know, the rush to judgment of, well, this team shouldn't lose, and this team shouldn't lose, and, well, what about all that talk about they would beat the Knicks? They wouldn't beat the Knicks. I wish people would quit saying that. They would not beat the Knicks. If you put them in a matchup, the team against the Knicks, I'm sorry, the Knicks would be a double-digit favorite. There's no way they would beat the Knicks because it's a team of professionals. I don't care how bad they are. But in saying that, will they go down as one of the best teams in college basketball history? Absolutely. And if you say they're not, you're crazy. I challenge you to tell me that they're not one of the best college basketball. So that's like saying that the UNLV teams weren't one of the best college basketball teams in basketball history with Larry Johnson and Stacey Augmon. And then the Fab Five. That's like saying the Fab Five with Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, and those guys. You know, Mark Jackson. Those guys were one of the best teams in college basketball history. So over the years, just because you don't win the title doesn't mean you can't be classified as one of the greatest college basketball teams of all time. And I think this is another example of it, right? Just because they don't win it doesn't take away from their accomplishments. And I hope people step back and realize that once they have some time to digest the season and a little bit more time passes.
Yeah, and one of the things that, speaking of Chris Webber, one of the things that I thought was interesting was how negative Chris Webber was being towards these kids. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, what is his damage? You know, I mean, you know, he was saying how Willie Cauley-Stein, you know, won't be able to play in the NBA because, you know, he averages less than 10 points a game. And I'm sitting there like, do you even watch Kentucky basketball? Like, he averages 10 points a game in half of a game. You know, I mean, you know, that's basically 20 points a game. And I'm sitting there like, that's kind of stupid for him to make that statement without knowing what he's talking about. I thought for sure some of the worst commentary, you know, some of the worst commentary came from Chris Webber, who supposedly knows the game of basketball, but showed zero basketball IQ. Coming down the stretch, especially in talking about Kentucky, you know, and he got into a Twitter battle with several people, you know, Kentucky fans and non-Kentucky fans alike, after he made some of his statements, and he felt like he came out on top. And to me, that's the most dangerous kind of commentator out there that you can have, is somebody who's so ignorant that they don't realize they're that ignorant. And I think that, you know, and to be fair, I say ignorant meaning, you know, he doesn't have a clue of Kentucky basketball, which is fine, because a lot of times these commentators don't realize, you know, how much that they're watching or playing, how much they're playing, how much another team is playing until tournament time, when they get to, when they get that much more exposure. So I thought it was interesting that, you know, for someone being so ignorant about Kentucky basketball, that he chose to speak up in regards to Willie Cauley-Stein, and also saying that this team was would probably be beaten by the Southern Illinois, or the Illinois team that was all like 5'6" and below. He said that because it was a different style of basketball. I was like, are you kidding me? 5'6" people wouldn't even be able to shoot over these guys. I mean, they'd put up a game just because of their speed. But when you have people that all they got to do is lift their hands up, swat a ball out of the air, I mean, you got 2 feet difference in that case in some of these kids. And I thought that
right.
some really uneducated statements made by Chris Webber, especially on a national spotlight. I was kind of embarrassed for him, and a little bit more embarrassed for him when I saw his defense of some of these in the next day on Twitter. I was like, at some point when so many people are telling you something, including your coworkers, at some point you do have to stop and say, maybe it's something I'm saying, maybe something I'm saying isn't quite so controversial. Maybe it's just flat out wrong and incorrect. And that's what Chris Webber, I think, did not realize.
Well, we all know he is quite forgetful. I mean, he is the only one in history to call a timeout when he does not have a timeout. So, I mean, you know.
That's true. It's very true. That is very true. Yeah, I was definitely kind of shocked about stuff like that, like about his words.
Absolutely, absolutely. Another big news today, Doc. I don't know if you had got to this before I got on board, but the second man that, of course, the one was killed, but the other individual involved in the Boston Marathon bombing, Zokhar Tsarnaev, was convicted on Wednesday of all charges in the Boston Marathon bombing by a federal jury. This same federal jury will now decide whether the 21-year-old former college student will get the death penalty or spend the rest of his life in jail. He was found guilty on all 30 counts against him. Also found guilty of conspiracy and deadly use of a weapon of mass destruction. 17 of the counts that he was found guilty on are punishable by the death penalty. The verdict was reached after 11 hours of deliberation over 2 days. So that coming out today. So I know the people involved with the Boston Marathon and the people in Boston were probably glad to see justice served there. And I would imagine the populist vote would like to see this man be executed and not spend the rest of his life in jail, if it were me.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I really don't want to delve too much into that, but I think you're right. I think a lot of the people in the population would like to see what this man did to so many be done to him, especially in the climate that we're in right now in the world. But I agree. I think that his life should end. I'm not one to play God or anything like that, but when you do that to so many people, you kind of take your own existence into your own hands. And that's what I'm basing my opinion on, is, you know, he's willing to do that to other people, so he should, you know,
be thinking if I get caught, the same is going to be done to me. So it, to me, it's fair game, I guess, because he killed other people willingly.
That's kind of my take on it as well. But I just wanted to shed light on that situation. I know we had covered it when it first broke back in 2013. So that was that came out today. In other college basketball news, on the women's side of things, the UConn women, Doc, continue to just dominate. That's all you can say, picking up yet another national title, cementing the legacy of Coach Gino Auriemma and that UConn women's program. It's just impressive what he's able to do time and time again, just reload after reload after reload and continuing to dominate women's college basketball.
You know, and it's interesting, too, because to me that's another guy that really is, you know, he knows women's basketball, definitely, for sure, but he's made some statements about college basketball, men's college basketball in particular, that, you know, they're doing things the wrong way. And I'm sitting there like, well, the ratings are so much higher, you can't really be one to judge. So I like him. I like what he's accomplished at Connecticut. He's turned that program into a dynasty. But at the same time, once again, speaking a little bit like I was with Chris Webber earlier, you know, he can still be ignorant of another situation. It looks like Coach Gino Auriemma is definitely a little bit ignorant when it comes to men's college basketball, especially making some of the statements that he was making, saying that, you know, they're in a bad spot and college men's college basketball isn't where it's at right now and all that. I mean, clearly it is, or else they wouldn't be drawing the ratings. The Kentucky-Wisconsin game was the highest-rated tournament game since the 1993 Kentucky, the Kentucky game in 93 with Duke. So clearly, Coach Auriemma, I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to say he's ignorant of the situation, but definitely needing to fact check a statement or two before he comes across and says it would probably help Coach Auriemma a whole lot. And I mean that with respect. I'm not trying to be condescending. Like I said, you can use the term ignorant in regards to, you know, someone being very smart. Like, for example, a rocket scientist is probably ignorant of, say, how to maybe clean a vacuum out or, you know, do something that, you know, that they wouldn't do normally every day at their job. And I don't mean it as disrespect when I say the term ignorant, because it's used that way. It's, you know, whenever someone, like, if I were to call you ignorant, you'd be angry at me. But if I were to call you ignorant of polar bear wrestling, you'd be like, oh yeah, well yeah, in that case I'm a complete ignorant. Yeah, sure. So that's all I mean is that Coach Auriemma seems to be ignorant of the happenings in men's college basketball.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that point. He has made some pop shots at men's college basketball that weren't warranted. But at the same time, you know, you taking that out of the equation, you still can't take away from the fact that he is one of the greatest women's coaches of all time, and he does have a...
Oh, absolutely team. Not. I put him with Pat Summitt all day long. All day long.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it is, you know, it's still awesome to see, you know, pretty cool. And I wonder this, Doc, you know, he's criticized men's college basketball in the past. And, you know, he said the comments that he has made. Do you think he would be successful as a men's coach if he tried his hand in it?
I think he would, actually. I think he would be successful because you can't have so much success in men and women's basketball and at least not have it translate somewhat. And, you know, like, I think when it comes to his ignorance of men's basketball, it's the mechanics and the day by day. I think he could do the X's and O's just like any other coach and any other successful coach, like a Pat Summitt or like a Jeff Walls. Or, you know, somewhere on some there, Matt Mitchell, you know, just like any other women's coach. I think he knows the X's and O's quite well.
I just think that when it comes to the counterpart of men, of knowing certain, you know, the day-by-day happenings, if you will, of men's basketball, that he may need a little bit of a tune-up session, I guess, so that he gets some of his statements correct and a little bit factual. And certainly he's entitled to his own opinion. He is definitely entitled to his own opinion. I may not agree with it, but you know what? I will fight him. I will fight every day for his right to say it, and I will, as ignorant as it may have been, it was definitely a malinformed opinion. And I think, like I said, I don't think that that reflects on poorly on how he would play and how he would fare as a college basketball men's coach.
Absolutely, and I just wanted to pass this along, Doc, in regards to the Kentucky players that could or possibly be declaring for the draft tomorrow at 2:30 in this press conference. According to reports from scout.com, Evan Daniels, he said, based on what he's heard and the reports that have come out, the only one of the Kentucky guys that seems like a toss-up as far as staying or going is Devin Booker. So it seems like all the guys that have been reported that are leaving are out of there, and the only one that could possibly change, that could possibly stay and not go to the draft, would be Devin Booker. So interesting stuff there.
Yeah. Right now we are joined by two folks that our audience might know quite well, Mr. Brian Cannon and Mr. Paul Ween. Brian, how you doing tonight, sir?
All pretty good.
What up,
good,
Brian?
Good. Paul, how are you tonight?
Okay.
Doing pretty good? Good.
I'm just very lengthy
responses.
Well, no, actually, I have a better response. I'm still recovering from this giant, you know, open wound, on my shoulder, where I have to change the dressing twice a day. I believe the doctor referred to it as chill maestro. No, I'm sorry. It's cancer. I'm sorry. I was way off.
Speaking of that, Paul and I, we're not going to announce it yet, but we're working on something kind of big
oh
in that
God.
Regard. So stay tuned for some pretty, what could be epic information for something, an event so unique. Every single one of Beaver Keeps It Real's listeners, as well as our listeners, would want to get in on this action. I guarantee it.
Let me just say, you called me up with the idea, and as soon as I had you on speaker, and this was private, this was offline, and as soon as you said the idea, before I had a chance to even respond, my wife Julie went, "Love it." So, yeah, stay tuned for what that is. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we're going to just simmer it and tease it. Let it tease. You know, it's kind of like a stripper, you know. It's going to stand up and dance in front of you, and it's going to tease you a little bit. So that's kind of what we're doing with this idea. So stay tuned with this idea that that Paul and I are working together on. I think you guys are going to like it.
Well, actually, I disagree.
I do want to go.
I think it's more like Raiders of the Lost Ark, where as soon as you reveal what the idea is, everybody's face is just going to melt.
yes.
Anyway, I'll be quiet.
I think that,
ahead,
that might
sorry.
Be a little bit more appropriate. Before we go any further, I want to go to Brian, because some sad news out of the world of OVW. I kind of started the hashtag the other night, I was there, that only about 150 people can say that they were there on this particular night. But, Brian, why don't you tell us what unfolded and the sad news of the result of what happened at the Saturday night special.
Well, the biggest thing that you're referring to would be, and it happened on the three-year anniversary, Randy Torres fought the Mexicutioner in a Loser Leaves OVW match, and the Mexicutioner did come out victorious. So Randy Torres is gone from OVW. However, he did have a nice send-off, because even though he'd been kind of being heelish as of late, he did have the crowd chanting his name and giving him a standing ovation and everything else. Even Danny Davis came out and you know, thank him for all he's done for OVW. So even though we're going to be missing Randy, he is moving on to some other things right now. You know, having a little bit of time off, having a little bit of family time, and all that stuff. So at least personally for him, that was one of the bigger things to come out of the special. And then also just some other quick results. Ryan Howell is now your new television champion, defeating Adam Revolver. And Muhammad Ali Vaez, thanks to the congregation, was able to keep the OVW Heavyweight Championship against Eddie Diamond.
So we still have Muhammad Ali holding the belt of the OVW Heavyweight Champions of the World.
Yes.
So, yeah, I want to, you know, very few times in wrestling, in the wrestling world, are you in a position? And Jimmy, I don't think was with Brandon and I that night 3 years ago. Were you with us when Randy Therese went down?
No, I was not.
Okay, so let me set the stage here. And one of the most very, very rarely in wrestling, very rarely, are you privy? And I say privy in a bad way in this case. Are you privy to watch one of the most horrific injuries you will ever see in your entire life? Jesse Goddard's was wrestling, having a match with Randy Therese, and it was going up to the payoff point of the match. They're working up towards it. Goddard's is on the ground. Therese is about ready to get up onto the top rope and jumps off the top rope and lands completely wrong on his leg, and you saw his joint pop out, tearing his MCL and PCL, especially since Brandon and I were on the front row, and immediately he and I looked at each other and just kind of cringed. We just knew, and then of course Josh Ashcraft, who was official at the time, did the right thing and threw up the X symbol, which you never want to see. For those of you all who are a little bit new to wrestling, or, you know, delve in it, or aren't as big into it as myself, Jimmy, Brian, and Paul, when you throw up the X symbol, that is breaking kayfabe, and that is saying that there is a real-time injury going on. At least in the
yep.
United States, that's what the X symbol means. And I
yep.
think that you know, that is a wrestler's only defense out there. When that happens, that is code for we have a serious situation. Something has gone wrong. The X symbol was thrown up immediately, and Jesse Goddard rolled up Randy Therese to finish the match. He did it on the leg that was not affected, so it did not hurt Randy. It took everybody to get Randy. I almost myself hopped the barricade, and Chris Sharp, who was the senior official at the time, kind of said, no, we've got this. You know, he knew what it was, because Randy is a longtime friend of the show. I think he's going to be on next week, actually, to talk about it. I think I talked with Randy earlier today, actually, and I think he's going to be on our show to talk about his times with OVW. So I think he is. He's going to be on definitely in the next couple weeks. But I think next week is what we settled on. But Randy Therese, just amazing guy, in and out of the ring. Longtime friend of the show, but one of the most horrific things I've ever seen in wrestling 3 years ago. I can say I was there, and it's one of those things where, you know, you really, yeah, we were with Randy every day, praying for him every day, because you know, he had a lot of personal stuff going on after that, and it was just a bad time. And I loved seeing him back in the ring again. It was just a relief, because I honestly didn't think he'd ever walk again.
Yeah, it was definitely gruesome. I remember the assassin coming out and actually carrying him to the back while he was screaming in pain.
Yeah,
you were there, weren't you? Yeah, I was there, and I mean, everybody knew as soon as he landed. You know, like that he just let out the most blood curdling when it happened, because you could tell the leg popped, you could tell he was in pain. I remember Jesse rolling him up real quick so that they could, you know, get him to the back. And like I said, I remember the assassin bringing him back and everything else. That was definitely a memory that kind of lodged into the brain. But it was good seeing, you know, come back from that. And you know, he, even though he played the bad guy the last couple of weeks. It was good to see him back and, you know, have some really good matches, whether it was Roberto or whether tag or together as champions as Paramac. So, you know, wish him the best as he moves on from him.
So, yeah, that was – so I think – is that all we got from OVW this week?
Well, that was all the Saturday Night Special. Two major happened tonight. Once again, they were talking about the big event in Knoxville and where the War Machine's going to take on Danny Davis and Trailer Park Trash. And then Jim Cornette said, well, for the Louisville audience at the Saturday Night Special, we're going to extend that six-man tag match with Josh Ashcraft in the War Machine, Danny Davis, Trailer Park Trash, and Jim Cornette. So we've got a six-man tag with some legends that special. And then Ali tonight came out and was talking about his face move and has told Eddie Diamond that the only way he can fight back to get another title shot is if he defeats each member of the congregation over the next few weeks. And tonight, Eddie Diamond, Jay Dawson, and sounds like next week will probably take on Jake Glazier and then Pastor Stu Miles the following week. If he beats all those challenges, he will get another shot at Ali's heavyweight title belt.
All right. Well, I'm going to be 100% honest. I did not watch Monday Night Raw, so going into the Raw section of this program, I had other things going on I had to take care of. So I'm going to hand it over to Jimmy, Paul, and Brian for Raw, and I'm just going to be a listener. I'm going to be a spectator on this one, guys.
Would you guys mind if I shoot this first?
Go ahead.
Okay, as far as a Raw review, I just have a problem. If any of you are on your computers and have a dictionary, like dictionary.com, if you can pull this up, I'd appreciate it, because how do you actually spell... How do you actually spell that? I'm not really sure.
Well, was it that bad, guys? Was Raw that bad?
Well, actually, Doc, I can say I'm right there with you. I didn't see it either.
It was horrible.
Wow.
It was horrible.
How about we let Brian and Paul drive this segment then?
Well, I'll say real quick that I thought it was kind of predictable because they had the triple threat match between Randy Orton, Roman Reigns, and Ryback to determine a number one contender, and you kind of knew that they were going to go with Orton all along to face Seth Rollins at Extreme Rules. So to me, it was kind of anticlimactic, and then there was a big beatdown at the end, you know, with the authorities, goons getting involved, and all that. To me, it was like Paul just said, it was totally a sleeper.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I don't – one thing I will say is on our show, I never give away spoilers. But that doesn't mean I don't look at them. I look at Wednesday morning, like I did this morning, the SmackDown spoilers. I don't give them away on our show, but I just look at them. But if you watch Raw on Monday night, it was almost like in your head before it started – you already had the spoilers. Same matches, same thing, same storyline, same vignette. But, you know, the storyline is fine, but there was no moving forward with the storyline. It was just stagnant. And it was just very boring. Very boring.
Well,
losing a little momentum maybe, I guess?
Do what?
So would it be safe to say that they were losing a little momentum from what they've been building towards?
Oh, no. It's like, you know, drive a car with, like, three flat tires. That's how it was.
Well, I want to go to Paul for this one to kind of get off Raw since neither I nor the doctor did. And according to Brian and Paul, it wasn't the greatest of all Raws. Paul, I want to ask your take on this story that broke the other day that involves Scott Steiner and Hulk Hogan. Scott Steiner allegedly approaching Hulk Hogan's wife at the airport in San Jose grabbing her by the arm and saying, you know, he wants to kill Terry. And, you know, TMZ first reporting this, now this all coming out. What's the deal with this situation, and what the heck is going on with Scott Steiner?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I'll go into the real answer in a moment. But you know what that incident reminds me of?
What's that?
I don't know how if you guys will remember this, but this is your drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? Remember that old PSA commercial? I don't know if you guys remember that or not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
But I just think that Scott, you know, in a lot of ways, and I'm not referring to in-ring style. I'm not referring to kayfabe character. I'm referring to the person himself. Like, I wouldn't be talking about Hulk Hogan. I'd be talking about Terry Bollea. So in this case, I'm talking about Scott Steiner, the person. In a way, he always reminded me of, like, a Brock Lesnar. He was just an SOB, just all the time. And, you know, hey, I'll be the first one to tell you, nothing beats an airport bar. But I don't know if he was drinking or he was on something, but what he did was horrible. And, you know, I'm not saying that this will bring Hulk and Linda back together, but I think it's cool that Hogan, despite every horrible thing she has done to him, both emotionally and, well, mentally also, and financially, that he was like, hey, that's not cool. So bravo. But it's just Scott Steiner being Scott Steiner.
Yeah, it wasn't very smart at all.
No, it's not.
And it's only going to get himself into more trouble, get himself in deeper trouble. And, you know, he's only losing credibility for himself
right.
by doing stuff like this. And, you know, he's only giving himself a black eye. He's not affecting anybody else other than himself.
Uh-huh.
And so I agree with you. I thought it was very unacceptable and, frankly, you know, hopefully, you know, Hogan, if Hogan was smart, and I know he is, he'll pursue this to the fullest of his abilities, because if I were him, I would.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? This shows you that, you know, any wrestling promoter, I don't care if it's WWE, TNA, OVW, Brian, or any other company, you know, I don't care if, and this is so made up, and you'll see why in a minute. I don't care if he accepted a contract for $1 a year. The price is irrelevant. Now, let me ask you, Brian, wouldn't you, if he said, I'll sign with OVW for $1 a year, which is a steal, wouldn't you be like, no way, this guy's too unpredictable?
Brian actually had to bow out. He just messaged me saying
okay.
He did, in fact, had to bow out.
Well, I mean, I'd rather hire someone more stable like Brian Pillman.
Hey, I'll tell you this much, Paul. I would rather hire Chris Gehry than hire Scott Steiner.
Whoa!
So you want to put yourself out of business. Okay, yeah, okay, that's cool.
I'm just saying, if I had my choice, would I take my chances with Chris Gehry, or would I deal with a psychotic jackanape like Scott Steiner?
Yeah. You got a point there. I'll give you that.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so, I just think it was really messed up what Scott Steiner did, and you know what? Just live off your merchandise royalties, live off your convention appearances, and just go away. Because, you know, everywhere you go, you cause chaos. So if you cause chaos in an airport, imagine how much chaos you would cause if you were backstage at, say, WrestleMania or Bound for Glory.
Right, absolutely.
So have a nice day. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. And I think we can all agree, Doc, the reason that Brian had to bow out, he's still upset over the fact that his Cardinals actually lost to the Cubs today. He's upset about it. He's not happy.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty embarrassing. I agree.
Paul, I know you're not a – I know you're you said it many times on the show. You're not the most avid of sports watchers. Do you get wrapped up to any of the hype surrounding the majors in golf?
Fair
answer. The reason why I asked is because we got about 10 minutes left to go on the show, and I wanted to get to this a bit ago, so I want to ask the Doc now. Doc, we know it's a big field. It's the first big event of the year. So give me your three picks for the Masters for this weekend.
I'm going to have to say Rory. I'm going to have to say who am I thinking of? McDowell. Colin McDowell. And I'm going to have to say...
You mean Graham McDowell?
Graham McDowell, sorry, yeah, Graham McDowell. And I think I'm going to have to say Bubba.
All right, I'm going to go with Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and, of course, I'm going to go with Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't pick him, so I'm going to regardless, Tiger Woods.
I didn't think he was in the field.
He is. He is.
Is he in the field? I thought he was going to be playing the Senior Tour version of this.
Well, considering they don't have a Senior Tour version of the Masters, that would be kind of hard.
I'm aware. I was as crippled as he is lately.
Your try at a joke fell on deaf ears on that one, sir. It fell on deaf ears. go ahead.
No, by all means, because what I was going to ask you can wait until almost the end of the show.
Okay, well, I was just going to say a non-sports-related story, but something I know most of the people around here can relate. If you haven't yet, do yourself the favor, head to the theater, see the 7th installment of Fast and the Furious.
Yes. We'll be talking about tomorrow in the lounge.
Well, I went and saw it last night. Absolutely amazing. You would think 7 movies in, it couldn't get any better. It got totally better. And I walked out of the theater in tears.
Yeah,
I
got to say, I had a little bit of a tearjerker myself. I agree.
I sobbed like a baby for 2 minutes at the end of the movie. I'm not going to
sobbing.
You know what, Postmaster? Thanks a lot. Because now I feel terrible about myself.
Why is that?
Less of a person. Because you walked out of the movie theater in tears. I don't know why, because I haven't seen it yet. And we don't, I know you and me guys don't do spoilers. So I don't know why it was a tearjerker, and we're not saying why. So you walk out in tears on the Fast and the Furious. I walk out in tears from the Muppets. Thank you very much for making me feel like
that. Paul, I'll just tell you. Do you know about Paul Walker? You know how he passed away in real life.
And may he rest in peace. Yes, I do.
Absolutely. Well, it's not necessarily part of the movie. You actually don't have to see the movie to know this. It's not a spoiler, but they pay tribute to him at the end of the movie, and it's very moving and touching.
Oh, very cool. And you know what? Well deserved. So that's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was...
Now,
that was,
speaking of non-related sports shows,
I'm kind of dropping this on Jimmy at the last minute here. But one of his and I's favorite show is going off the air this week and next week.
I'm not going to say anything about it.
I was simply going to ask for 15 minutes tomorrow, give you some time, and next Thursday. Not only would I appreciate you obviously being my guest here, you know, as our co-host, but would you be my guest on the lounge to discuss Justified for 15 minutes tomorrow and for 15 minutes next week in tribute of it going off the air?
I mean, as long as I've watched this week's episode by then, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So tomorrow you might be on the lounge. Next week you'll definitely be. I won't take no for an answer next week. Yeah. I won't take no for an answer next week. So, but all right. Fantastic.
I'm looking forward to these last few episodes. Absolutely. It sucks that it's ending, but you know, it's been a hell of a show.
It has been. It's been really good. It's been fantastic, actually.
And speaking of the show, real quick, as of last, like I said, I haven't watched last night's yet, but as far as last week's go, did I not tell you there was a rather gruesome part in the?
Yes, there was. There's actually a pretty gruesome part in this week's scene, but fortunately, my spider sense started tingling, and I started to know when it was going to be. And but I'm going to have to let you know what was said in the truck. That's all I'm going to tell you. So.
You're gonna have to take some notes.
You're gonna have to take some notes for me when they're in a truck, and you're gonna have to take some notes. So.
I have to take some cliff notes.
Yeah, you're gonna take some cliff notes for me. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it was it's been a great episode. So next week I'm expecting a mass genocide. If you're a main character next week, you're on notice. I'll say that. Because we don't know who's making it out of Harlan alive, if anybody. We really don't. We really don't know who's making it out of Harlan alive, if anybody's going to be making it out of there alive. What's that?
If Raylan doesn't make it out alive, my dad will flip a shit.
Whoa!
I thought you guys weren't supposed to curse.
That's what I'm sitting here thinking. What are you thinking right there? Letting that word fly.
It's almost 10 o'clock.
Now I got to put the R rating up. I got to put the R rating up now.
Hello. I
switched. You switched to my network. You can curse like sailors. I don't care.
But no, in all seriousness, my father hates movies and shows where the main character gets lopped off. So if Raylan goes next week, my dad will be mad as can be.
Paul, we got limited time left. Tell us about your show tomorrow, sir.
Well, tomorrow night we're doing This Week in Wrestling, and we're going to have some special guests on and talk about, you know, what's been going on in wrestling. We're going to be focusing on, actually, our friend George from Australia, who actually traveled to California, and he did the whole gamut. He went to Fan Access, WrestleMania, Raw, Smack, to Hall of Fame, the whole deal. And he'll be giving us a first-hand perspective of what it was like to be at those events, which none of us were. That'll be kind of cool. And we'll just be going on to the regular stuff. So it's from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The call-in number is 818-369-1406. And if Fever Keeps It Real, you never know. So check me out.
Awesome. Well, our next program here on the Triple Threat Network will be my show, The Lounge, tomorrow from 9 to 11 p.m. tomorrow. So sit back, enjoy, sit back, kick back, and relax, and embrace your inner nerd as The Lounge returns with a brand new episode tomorrow, immediately following Fever Keeps It Real. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us tonight. We hope you've enjoyed Triple Threat Talk. We'll be back again in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. Good night, everybody.
Good night, brothers.